as the Nationals are a strike away from franchise history and some World Series history. The kick, and here it comes. Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by ExpressVPN and DoorDash. I'm Victor Manis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just remember, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcasts and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Speaking of which, we got the best review yet. 5 stars, titled, Love Me Some Vic. Quote,
is it by that British teenage girl?
Quote, I feel like Vic would make a great stuffed animal. I'd buy one. I'm sure others would too. The Vic doll. I'm thinking, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking
the real Vic.
A wind up, right? And it'd be like, I like hugs. Squeeze harder. How about, uh-oh. You like that? Uh-oh. Anyway, Sonny, you have nothing to add. No? I think a Vic doll would be great.
I can think of many uses.
Would
the Vic doll come with a life-size head?
Yeah, it would be huge.
Realistic head?
Yeah, absolutely.
It would be too big for any child's bed.
Like one of those giant pillows, like a stuffy, like, you know, like in my daughter's room, it's like a stuffed cupcake. Pillow, a cupcake, except it'd be my head.
Or like the pillow that James Franco carries around in that 30 Rock episode.
Sure, whatever works. So anyway, thank you. And that was from listener Met Sox 45. Sounds like a baseball fan. Speaking of baseball, JVL, Sonny, how about that World Series?
God, I can't do this anymore.
You've seen it. You've been there. Had you ever been to a World Series before?
No. No, never been to a World Series game before. And have you guys been to World Series games?
No.
Never. And this was the most unusual World Series, obviously, because the Astros fans can also say the same thing as the Nats fans, which is every game they went to.
They lost. Yeah, no, this is the first time in any of the major sports that have a 7-game series championship that the road team won all 7 games. Never happened before.
It's bizarre.
It's crazy, but I would like to talk about politics for one moment.
If you had tried to make a prop bet on that, what do you think the odds you could have gotten are? 10,000 to 1,
something like that. Yeah.
If you were like, I'm going to bet 10,000 to 1 that that's the great. Road team wins every.
That's a great bet.
Every. Ugh. I mean, you would lose every time.
Except for the one time it pays off, that's it. You're done.
It's like betting the all number one seeds making it to the Final Four. Right. Never happens except for the time it happens.
Yeah.
So politics for five seconds. I'd like to offer my vote for sale in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. I will vote for whatever candidate announces that they will, by executive order, decree that no World Series game may start after 7:05 Eastern time. Because the 8 o'clock start on a World Series game has wrecked my life.
Mm-hmm.
I am barely functional.
Yeah.
And when we went to the games, we weren't getting home until 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning because, man, that's rough.
Yeah.
And the World Series games themselves take much, like 45 minutes longer than a normal baseball
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
And so even watching it from the comfort of your home, you're up until midnight, 12:15.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't
and
do
you're
that.
Right. No, it's exhausting.
I can't.
It was exhausting.
Can you? Totally. I couldn't look. I couldn't stay up that late when I was in college even. But as an old person with mm-hmm. small children in the house, it's just destroyed me.
It is, and
it is. We're taping this at 9. Yeah. It is currently 9:11,
mm-hmm.
and I've already had 8 shots of espresso. I'm on my second Diet Coke, mm-hmm. and I am barely awake.
I have friends who, my friends up in Boston, Steve Eustera, Steve Schmidt, and they said, get used to it. This is what it's going to be like for the next week or so, you know, with a team in the World Series is just very little sleep. You're exhausted. It's all you're doing, and power through it. You got to power through it.
Did you guys watch?
Of course.
Sonny, you did not watch a single at bat, did you?
No, I watched a little bit because I was in Dallas last week, and when the World Series started, and it was like on in the background when I would go out to restaurants or bars or whatever, I'd be like, oh, the Nationals seem to be winning, because it was the first two games, so it was like, wow, they're gonna sweep the Astros. That's crazy, obviously.
But also, it's kind of weird because you're in Dallas, so it's all Rangers territory. I don't know how.
Yeah, they're rooting against Houston.
Were they rooting against the Astros?
I bet they don't like each other. Those cities do not like.
Do they not?
I know people.
It's not like a Texas Strong thing.
No. I know people from Houston and Dallas who hate literally. They hate the other city or the people from it or they say it's like Pittsburgh, Philly.
People in Philly barely know that Pittsburgh exists. There is no rivalry at all. I believe the Pittsburgh-Philly rivalry is like the Princeton-Harvard rivalry. You know, like wow. Harvard.
Ouch. Ouch.
Harvard's like, I'm sorry, you guys are what?
Wow.
So you
no
you,
offense
Sonny,
to our Pittsburgh listeners.
You were not into. No, this isn't a. I'm sorry. This is not a class thing. Pittsburgh is a great city. It is that Pittsburgh might as well be the Midwest.
Right.
Pittsburgh
Philly,
is a Midwestern
Philly
city,
is
and
all
Philly
about
is
Philly.
Basically like a New England city.
Mm-hmm. And Philly looks at New York.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also just the part of the country. Yeah. Geographically, Philadelphia is a northeastern city.
It's a weird,
and Pittsburgh is a Midwestern city. People say pop instead of Coke in Midwest in Pittsburgh. Anyway.
Do they say Coke in Philly?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what do you think we snort? So what... You didn't. Have you ever been a baseball guy? For some reason, I thought you were a baseball guy.
I'm an Orioles fan.
I thought you were. Yeah, that's right. You're an Orioles fan.
I'm a fan of the actual home team for the Washington D.C. area.
Ouch.
So when the Nationals do well, I'm happy. I'm like, I don't have this like, I don't feel any sort of rivalry or anything with the Nationals. I'm happy for Nationals fans, but that's not my team. So.
I'm not a Nationals team, a Nationals fan either. I'm a fan of baseball.
I know, and this is why I think it's so weird that you would you'd sell your soul to your sleep to go to these games. I don't understand it. I just don't get it because
you can't go to a World Series game unless it's in your city, right? You cannot easily go to a World Series game unless it is local. And the chance to go to a World Series game is tremendous. And it doesn't matter if you are in love with the team or not. Mm-hmm. Flash and I have a sort of special bond with two of the players on the team, Juan Soto and Victor Robles, who we watched in their league years, just like last year and the year before. And it was, I mean, you know, like Flash would like talk with Victor before games and stuff. And now he's like out in the field. And the two guys, because they play left and center, warm each other up in between innings when they're out in the field. And it's kind of, you know, very sweet to watch them. Also, this team is infinitely more likable minus Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I was...
This is a real thing. This is, you know, they are... It's not an accident that they started winning once they got rid of them.
So is this the new Ewing theory? Remember the old Ewing theory that Bill Simmons had? It was like
we got rid of him because
he leaves Georgetown and Georgetown wins the title, right? Wasn't that
what happened? No, he won in 82 with
him. I can't remember. It was, but it's like
No. You're absolutely right. They got to 82. They lost, I think, to Houston, and then they won in 84.
Right. So it was like the next year or the year after that, and then he never won with the Knicks, and then they got better after he left or something. I don't know.
Corrections.
But what did Simmons think it was because? I'm sorry. What time it is? Did Simmons think it was because Ewing was such a D-bag that everybody else on the team hated him?
I don't think.
And
we
he made the clubhouse unhappy.
I don't. I think that is. I don't know that is specifically it,
or
but
just
I think
that
there's
a problem with running the offense
that is
a
part
dominant
of it.
Center.
Here's a better question. Is Dusty Baker the new Ewing theory?
Mm-mm. Don't
candidate?
Go there.
No,
don't go there.
I don't think there's – I don't blame
Remember
Dusty
when everybody
for
wanted
problem.
To fire Davey Martinez at the beginning of
yeah,
this year?
Yeah.
Sure. But
remember,
I mean,
what, remember,
problem was
remember,
injuries
remember
that
every
point.
Time that, you know, that he got to the playoffs and then he crapped the bed?
Well, but he had Bryce Harper on the team.
That's
and
true.
Unhappy,
see, that's right.
Get rid of both of them.
I saw
our problems.
Outside the Nats stadium last night, there were fans who burned the Bryce Harper jersey. They burned it.
Melted it.
Yeah, no, and they were like, it was almost exorcistic, you know? I mean, they wanted to, he's done. He's dead to them. He's dead to
them.
That
guy. He is now a man without a country because he's up in Philly, mm-hmm. and they hate him in Philly. And now having won without him, everybody in Washington, all the, like the good feeling. Oh man, it was really tough.
Right,
when we lost
Bryce.
Now they're like, oh
just,
my god,
they
that guy
say
was.
It now. They
god,
say
we
it
hated
now.
Him.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah,
it's.
Great. I mean, I got a text from a friend who was like, I wonder what Bryce Harper's doing right now. And I said, he's probably in that awful strip club outside Philly that I had to go to my friend's bachelor party.
Cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Pulsations. Delilah's.
I think it was called Pulsations.
Yeah.
Maybe it was called
Temptations. They're all right next to each other.
Temptations, like in a factory warehouse district.
He's probably sleeping on his, you know, mattress stuffed with $100 bills.
Standing in front of the mirror fixing his hair. Right? That's what Bryce does.
American Psycho style.
So did you guys have World Series thoughts? No?
I'm just very happy for the team. I find all these players to be very likable. I find them all to be, with the exception of, I was not a fan of the relief pitcher, Rodney.
Nobody likes Fernando Rodney.
You know,
because he's like 45 years old and he just gives up runs.
It's like all he does. And Guerra is the other pitcher who I think, oh man, I'm glad we got through them. And we barely survived. Yeah.
Did the Nats beat Garrett Cole twice?
No, once.
Oh, once.
Okay.
And then he won the fifth game Scherzer bailed on.
Mm-hmm. He won game five. Yeah. Right. We were at that game. It was done. So this is something I had not realized, is that when you are live in a stadium, even from far away, you can tell the difference between 98 miles an hour and 94 miles an hour.
Huh.
Like, it just looks faster.
How far away were you? Where were your seats?
We were dead center, maybe a little bit to the right of center field, on the first level.
Mm-hmm.
Cole was fantastic. What a performance!
No. It was Verlander who the Nats
beat Verlander.
So they beat Verlander and Cole in games one and two,
and
I kind of mystified that Cole didn't get put in the game last night. They went after Greinke. They went to
Harris?
Asuna.
No.
Went to Harris, mm-hmm. then Asuna, instead of going to Cole, which was interesting because Cole's out there warming up, ready to go. It was great. Now, I think Houston is also a likable team.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone seems to like Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah. My friend George is down there, and he had box seats for a Bank of America because that's where he works. And but he had 102 fever.
Ooh. So
did not go to the game.
JBL, can we talk about how you got the tickets?
Sure. I like how you give a pause in case we want to edit this. Yeah, out.
No, just in case, because my understanding is you actually bought season tickets,
half season tickets
to the you split a season ticket package.
I bought a half season ticket package.
Oh, you bought a half season ticket.
So that's an option, or do you have, or is that you buy the whole season and you split it with a friend?
No. So actually, my friend Sarah and I each bought half season tickets next to each other. So we have four seats in a row and two
for all the same games.
Mm-hmm. We think so. We don't know. We won't know until we get the thing.
Okay.
In March or whenever they.
So you bought two tickets to 40 Nats games.
Yes.
So you could watch three losses in the World Series.
So that I could watch the Nationals score three runs in three games.
Look, that's good, right?
But you know what?
That's good, isn't it?
Is that good? It was great. It was absolutely great. And also, this is the other thing. One of the reasons I was convinced that this would all be worth it was because Flash and I are not actually Nats fans. Those losses didn't bother us at all.
Right.
We were just there to see the World Series. And we got to see the World Series, and we had all of the upside of like, holy crap, we're in a World Series game.
But
none of the downside of like, oh, our team lost. Our hearts are ripped out.
But I'm also I'm surprised that because you and Flash, actually know some of the players, that hasn't swayed him to be more of a Nats fan.
No. Do you know what sways him?
Winning?
The winning. Last night. Well, so now he's closing in. Yeah. He was like, huh.
So he's not a Cubs fan anymore.
He's like, no, I love the Cubs, but you're allowed to have a home team, too. And he's like, I think that I'm going to buy the Nats championship jersey when they put it out for the first home. Because they always do a first home stand version of a jersey. Exactly. It's an alt. And I was like, dude. And he's like, I'm not that much of a front runner. I said, let's just tick off the authentic MLB fitted caps, which are currently sitting in our garage. We have the Cubs, the Cleveland Indians, the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, yeah, the Dodgers.
The Boston Red Sox and the Washington Nationals. What do all five of these teams have in common? All five of them have participated in the World Series over the course of the last 5 years.
I have to say.
Winning.
I have,
hashtag winning.
I have to say, This is the one thing I judge you about, JBL. This is a failure in parenting. You have to instill, you know, moral character in your children by making them cheer for losers. This is why I'm still an Orioles fan. I'm gonna raise the next generation of Orioles fans.
It makes the winning that much more meaningful when you have to suffer. That's why I still follow the Redskins since they won when I was a freshman at Georgetown, and it was that second semester. I said, oh my gosh.
Well, so you started as a front runner.
Bandwagon.
And then you stayed on the bandwagon.
That North Turner is great.
Hold on. You were a Giants fan growing
up. Not really.
Up.
I was. I would, geographically, that would be it more than Philly. But I was not really into football.
Oh,
so you
okay.
know, then I was
so
like,
"You
wow.
adopted?"
Yeah, I adopted, and then of course I really got into football when Fred Barnes gave me his then Redskins.
You and I went there tickets. Together.
Yes, and I remember watching.
Those seats were amazing.
They were amazing. They were end zone seats,
like 12 mm-hmm. rows up in the
but
end zone.
But I remember, yeah, that's right, and I remember actually seeing Jerry Rice because there was a Niners game that I also had seen there, and I went with my other friend Keith this one time, and we had an extra ticket. So we scalped the ticket, and the money we got for that ticket was just enough for the food and drink.
Yeah, you probably got like $200 for that ticket.
And it was like fried chicken, maybe a hot dog, and a couple beers. That's it. There's your $200.
The only time I've been to FedEx Field twice now. The first was for a Packers game where I like bought the tickets and was in like the upper. Like the last row of FedEx Field. Like,
which doesn't exist
like,
anymore.
Yeah, which like is
out of embarrassment.
Over now. Yeah,
it's embarrassment.
And that was like a bad experience. Just everything about it was a bad experience. But the other time I went was a friend had some club seats. It was against like the Cardinals or something. So the stadium was half full. Nobody really cared. And when we were sitting in the club section and watching the game, and all of a sudden one of the beer guys comes around, and a guy who was like two rows in front of us was like, "Beers for the section!" And he just like pulls out an enormous wad of cash and starts like peeling off $100 bills. And like the beer guy's like, "I can't really do that because, you know, I don't know the age." He's like, "Give everyone a beer." Ah! And so like it just like started handing them down the aisle to people.
Wow.
That was the single most extravagant expenditure I've ever seen anyone ever make. It was an insane thing.
I can top that.
Generous.
I can top that.
JBL.
Because I got an email yesterday at 12:35 from our buddy Dan. And Dan sent me a picture of him on an airplane with his son, decked out in Nationals gear. And he said, "I picked him up from school at 11 o'clock. Total surprise. We're on a plane to Houston."
Oh, man.
Wow.
And so he, I believe, went and at like 11:45 as game six was winding down, bought plane tickets to Houston, got his kid, and I haven't talked to him since. I haven't gotten pictures from the game.
It was worth it then.
But how great is that? He and his kid will remember that the day he died. Father of the Year voting is closed.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Dan is the big winner.
It's funny because, you know, I mean, it was getting late, and, you know, and my daughter went to bed, but my son stayed up till.
He stayed up, right?
He stayed up. But it was funny because it's like, you know, bottom of the eighth. And Kate was like, "Okay, now it's probably time to go to sleep." right before the top of the really, right now. Well, you know, he's got to get up early tomorrow. I'm like, okay. So anyway, I'm happy about that because I said, you know, who knows when we'll see this again. I mean,
never.
Maybe.
So this is. I mean,
it was really quite something. They barely made it through the wild card game against the Brewers.
These fans in this city are such garbage.
I know you were. Go ahead.
We're at the. Two notes from the game. There were kids. There was a group of people in front of us for game three. Two adults and a 14-year-old. And the 14-year-old spent literally every second of the game staring down at his phone playing games.
Yep.
Like a variety of different games.
He had tickets to go. He's there at the World Series.
And never looked up even once. In game five...
I don't think that is a generational, garbage millennial, you know, or whatever post millennial Gen Z thing is.
The other thing was at the top of the ninth inning in game five, where it was clear the Nationals were going to lose.
Right. It was.
People started leaving the stadium.
Sure. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, half the stadiums in the major leagues have never gotten and never will get a World Series game.
That's right.
Right? If you're in San Diego, your beautiful Petco Park has never had a World Series game in it and never will.
Mm-hmm.
This is precious.
Right.
You may never get another one of these.
Because I was going to say in Houston.
Stay for the last 10 minutes.
In Houston, of course, you know, when we were up, whatever the score was, that blowout in game two.
Right.
Yeah, and they all left. A lot of people left early, obviously. But, you know, they've been to this rodeo before.
They've been to this rodeo before. They had a very good chance that they were going to be back. It just struck me that if you have gone 86 years with a World Series drought in your town, and you're there, and I guess if you wanted to leave in the seventh inning or the fifth inning, I'd be like, okay, well, you're saving yourself 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But for those last 10 minutes, it's like the people who leave church after communion.
Well, I mean, there's a
Stay there for the Lord.
There's a parking situation there, JVL. Sometimes you just got to get out of that parking lot. Number two, at my church, of course, they right before they give you the final blessing, I've complained about this before. In fact, I complained about it personally to Cardinal Sara, my buddy in Rome. And he goes, okay.
What's with all the announcements,
yeah,
Cardinal?
Yeah, because before they do announcements, and then they go, okay, now, are there anybody's birthdays this week? Hey, happy birthday. Do we have anniversaries? Hey, how many years?
Are you kidding?
No. How many years? Meanwhile, you know, everything is still up there at the altar.
You're a Presbyterian?
You would think. How many years? Oh, that's great. And newcomers, visitors, where are you from? Oh, hey, welcome. Yay.
That is horrific.
Yeah. And that was like newly instituted with the new pastor, and everyone goes through it. And then after, okay, let's rise for the final blessing now.
Okay, you know what?
Yeah, isn't that bad?
You might as well
flee.
Just leave. Sonny, do you stay after the Eucharist and wait for the final benediction, or do you just get out right after you receive?
Well, are you one of those bad Catholics?
When I, you know, on Easter and Christmas
and Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh. Okay. Any other World Series thoughts?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Worth every penny. That's my thought.
It was worth every penny. Regard. No, I mean,
I have no buyer's remorse whatsoever. I have
plus,
the
it's
opposite
a great stadium.
Of buyers. No, it's a mediocre stadium.
Deeply mediocre stadium.
They got restaurants, bars.
They've got food.
They've got beer. Let me ask you, watch baseball.
What more do you want?
I'll ask you one.
You know what I remember?
Compared to Camden Yards, it's a crap hole. I mean,
The area is a very nice area now.
Victorino, I have a question for you. Have you been to the National Stadium?
I've been there a couple times.
One of the food stands they have sells lobster rolls.
Yeah.
Would I get that lobster at a stadium?
I got that at what was then Pac Bell.
And what percentage of the thing in a lobster roll is actual lobster meat as opposed
versus
to
what?
Like
filler? That fake
crab? The fake lobster and the fake crab, which is all just like mollusks,
well,
right?
I don't know. I mean, is it that lobster truck, that red hook lobster? Then it's gonna
or
be
Luke's?
All that Luke's, then it's gonna be all lobster, right? Is it Luke's?
I don't believe it's one of the big ones.
And there's a Shake Shack too there, but of course that line is impossible. I'm sure.
Not when you're a half season ticket plan, you don't have to stand in the lines.
Oh, really?
Harrison told me all
that. How
does
that work?
Because you are allowed to use
is there like
e-cash,
a fast pass?
And when you use e-cash, which is only available to half season and full season plan holders, you have a separate line. When Harrison told me about this, I was like, what?
Well, it's worth it.
Now it's worth it. Right, Sonny?
He goes, JVL, welcome to the real world.
Okay. Moving right along. I just wanted to say that today, of course, is Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
I'll take everything king size.
Still the champion.
You know what? And did you see the commercial, the Halloween commercial, where the kids are bargaining with the other kids and they have the king size Hershey bar?
Yeah.
And they're giving all this little candy because
the king size, because you want the king
size.
Controversial.
It's such a controversial champion.
It doesn't even matter what the candy is.
It's disqualified.
Does not even matter what the candy is. The king size is king. That's why it's called king.
You were thinking outside the box.
I was thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Are you transitioning?
No, I'm not actually. I was going to say, speaking of outside the box, office. No, I did want to talk.
I thought that's where you were going.
I didn't want to step on
it.
We'll come back to it later. Take five. Do you know Take Five?
I don't know what
that
is.
Have you seen it?
That sounds like a trash candy bar.
It's pretty good. And it's a combination of like chocolate, caramel, peanuts, pretzel, and...
So just everything.
everything, five ingredients. That's why it's take five.
It's all the trimmings. It's all the trimmings from the other candy bars, and they melt it down into a big pot, and they're like,
it's fancy.
Have this garbage bar.
It's fancy looking. It's almost rail. It's like Nutrageous.
The rail drink.
No, there used to be. Wasn't there?
It's like the stuff at the bottom of the trash.
You know,
bag.
At the bar.
You know, it's the liquid garbage, at the bottom of the trash the bag. Juice, the garbage shop.
Garbage juice. You know, they used to do in the bar. They would take the bar rag and then just squeeze it out into a shot, and that was a shot. No, but it sounds delicious. I would have picked that one. I think that's great. Up right up there with Nutrageous. But no, so I have to get out of here earlier today because our street does the Halloween parade and block party.
Oh, not tonight. They're not going to.
Well, this is the thing. So they think the storm is coming at 9. We usually have to, it's a potluck, and we used to make chili, but we don't have time to make the chili. I don't have time to make the chili, so I'm just going to Popeyes and getting like a giant box. Now, my hope is that the storm hits early and we all have to shelter in place. Then I'll have my gigantic box of Popeyes for myself tonight, and then I don't have to share it. That's my.
That sounds healthy.
That sounds healthy. That would be my candy.
Get it extra crispy.
That would be my candy draft, by the way.
Candy draft.
Number three, Popeyes. Chicken thigh.
Box of Popeyes.
Spicy thigh.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you were thinking outside the box, if you were putting some thought and some strategy into your draft like I was, like I always do in these drafts, and that's why I always win them. That's why I've won every draft that we've ever done, and we stopped doing
every
them.
Draft
we stopped because, doing them because I win.
Because
I win, and I win, and I do nothing but win, and you got sick of me winning. You got tired of the winning. You got tired of the winning, and I'm a winner. You're losers. You're both losers.
He plays the game the right way. He plays the game the
I play
right
the game
way.
The right
he
way.
He plays the game
I'm the
right
Mike Krzyzewski of this podcast.
Thank you. JVL.
Is it wrong that I am secretly hoping the storm hits early so we don't have to
trick-or-treat? I know. You know what's going to happen?
Wrong?
No, it's not wrong because I'm thinking the same thing.
Because these years are precious.
I know,
I should
but
not
it's such
wish
a chore. Trick-or-treat is such a chore.
It's because the world. I'm just too tired to trick-or-treat
and I got
to
bring a
today.
Tail. Plus
I
you
can't
know,
do it tonight. Plus, I need to go to bed.
Plus, Kate is in charge of that block. She has to get the permits. We got to get those giant orange cones. Not the cones, but what do you call it? The big ones. The big plastic gigantic things. I got to put them up on Washington
I think those are just bigger
Boulevard,
cones.
The bigger cones. And then I got to carry the table down the street. So, you know, that's my hope. But of course, it's not going to happen. They're going
to aren't you getting the Dwyers out to do all that?
Yeah, I know. They are coming, by the way. So my father-in-law.
Your father-in-law will carry all the heavy stuff over
actually,
there.
You know, he could stack them over
you,
the shoulder.
You got to watch
he
the kids. Them. You got to watch the kids.
I got to watch the kids. You know, be safe. Watch
Captain,
the house.
You can have Captain Bill.
Keep the haze. Yeah. I know. Oh, I was like, man, crazy game. And he's like, this is like the worst night ever. Because he, of course, he's, you know, down in Arlington.
Oh.
And he said it was like a combination of everything. It was like Halloween parties over the weekend, ooh, plus World Series, plus it was just.
I would like to actually see the DUI stats.
Yeah. No.
Last weekend, just to get
people
a. Get
crazy.
A I don't know. The DUI stats / the Uber stats. Like, what were the Uber surcharges like on that?
Yeah,
that
the surge.
The surging. Surge. The surging
so
price.
My prediction, JVL, is whether or not your kids, our kids, or all your kids, Sonny, everyone's going to trick-or-treat. If it's wind, rain, tornado, they're going to go, and it's going to be a mess. And speaking of messes, how about that Box Office Mojo site?
Oof.
What happened there? Well, what happened? I went to check the numbers, and I was so confused.
I know people may not want to hear us complain about the redesign of the website.
This is going
to
be.
But this is important to us.
This is important to us.
I don't know how to read it.
We spent the first 25 minutes on baseball. Now we're going to spend 10 minutes complaining about a box office data
this
site.
This is what you get.
This is,
this is a very special episode.
We've already got your download.
All you people who enjoyed Mary Catherine Ham last week, this is the exact opposite.
Sorry about that.
Do you like that episode, Sonny?
I still haven't listened to it. I've been busy.
Am I the only one who listens to the show when I'm not on it? No, I sometimes do, but I haven't listened to the ones I haven't.
I listen to it sometimes. I frankly, you know, podcasts.
I feel the same way. I do. Okay.
So, Vic, you went to Box Office Mojo, and you're surprised because you don't follow this stuff obsessively.
No, I don't. But I didn't. Suddenly, the colors. It's just give me the numbers, and instead, it was something entirely new.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
All right, so Sonny, do you want to explain to people?
Why don't you explain what happened?
Okay, so many years ago, this thing called the Internet Movie Database came out. and it was kind of cool. This was in the infancy of the internet, and people thought, hey, maybe this is a business. It'll be like Wikipedia for movies. Although this was before
it was like
was
one of
big.
The two sites I would go to was the Internet Movie Database and Whitehouse.com.
And people need to remember that IMDb is still mostly a user-generated site. Yeah, and their agents, they go to it and they upload people's, you know, appearances, whatever. This is why whenever you go to a big budget movie and you start scrolling through it, when you get to the bottom, you get to a lot of uncredited roles, and that's because somebody or their agents started putting in, like, extras in the movie.
Correct. And then... It's fascinating. I don't know, a decade ago or so, Amazon bought it. And Amazon purchased IMDb. And the idea behind this was that Amazon was going to sell movies through DVDs. This is because it's pre-streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when you went to the site. So you go to look up Godzilla, the 2010 Godzilla on Amazon.com, on IMDb. And Amazon was going to put a little, just look,
affiliate
buy it.
Link.
Right. Yeah. Affiliate, you just buy it right here.
It was essentially a giant affiliate farm.
And then IMDb decided to give out a pro version, basically for people in the industry. Mm-hmm. And they were going to
a giant directory.
A subscription product that allowed you to get in touch with people's agents.
Yeah.
And it was going to be like the LinkedIn for Hollywood.
It is marginally useful. I will put it that way. As somebody who, I remember when I was at the Washington Times, I had an IMDb Pro subscription because every once in a while I would need to get in touch with somebody directly, IMDb not through the studios.
Pro.
And the most success I ever had with that was with John Milius. John Milius. So I was working on a piece about the Red Dawn reboot, and I was like, I want to talk to John Milius about that. So I called his appearance agent or something, and I didn't really expect to hear back. And then 30 minutes later, got a phone call. It was like, hey, this is John Milius's agent. Do you want to? He's happy to talk to you. Can we do it tomorrow? I was like, yes, that is. But mostly, it is not of the phone numbers in there are often out of date and not the highest of quality.
So my sense. And you are closer to Hollywood now than I am. But my sense is that in Hollywood, if somebody is willing to take your call, it basically presumes that you already have their number. And if you have to go to a subscription website to get a contact for them, then they're just not going to talk
to
you.
No.
That's right.
Right? It is whatever. Well, this is why it's useful when you want to get in touch with agents.
Right.
More than they don't have Martin Scorsese's phone number on there. It's like they have the William Morris agency or whatever.
Even the people William Morris, right, are not going to be super interested in taking your call. Anyway, the point is then at some point the IMDb sub-company of the Amazon purchased the site Box Office Mojo, which was a kind of labor of love. This is, again, people forget that back before everything consolidated, the internet was full of things like this, like these tiny little businesses that were websites that were putting out some sort of marginal utility. And that's what Box Office Mojo was. It was a marginal utility for a subset of people like you, Sonny, who care about
and
Box UJ Office.
Video.
And right. But they're not, you know, there are not millions of us. There are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of us. And they're just making it work through ad dollars. But then as internet advertising has been in the process of drying up over the last decade, because the problem is ad prices are based on supply and demand. And the longer the internet exists, the greater supply of real estate there is on it. Mm-hmm. Because we just keep making more of it. This is why.
Because the internet is an infinite maw.
Right.
That needs to be filled at all times.
So anyway, and IMDb over the last week, 10 days, finally digested Box Office Mojo and has rendered the website unusable.
It is one of the great tragedies of our time.
It's the worst.
People point to Syria. People point to, you know, the Ukraine. And I'm just like, well, none of that matters now because Box Office Mojo is basically dead.
So 15 years ago, this would happen. People with pretty good websites would redesign them and do a terrible job at it. That's not the way it works anymore. Like now, most redesigns are at least marginal upgrades and occasionally tremendous upgrades.
This is
like somebody took a crap and just smeared it all over your screen.
Well, there are weird things about it that just do nothing but make it less useful to people. I mean, it is. Right. I mean, the problem with this redesign is that it is designed to make the website less useful to make people get the IMDb Pro subscription. So it's a real pain. And I would actually here's the simple truth of the matter. I would be willing to pay for a subscription to Box Office Mojo that just kept it the way it was.
100%.
I would pay $5 a month for that happily. I'd pay $10 a month for that. I don't know how. I frankly don't know how much I would pay for that. I don't want to think
about
how much.
Would you pay $1,500 lifetime?
possibly, for a lifetime. But they do weird things that just make it less usable and less easy to go through. Mm-hmm. For instance, Box Office Mojo used to have a release schedule calendar that would have not just the release dates. And the studios and genres and all that, but it would also have theater counts.
Yep.
So now the release dates just say wide, or IMAX wide, or nothing. It is not terribly useful. Now the individual charts themselves still have the theater counts because they do the per screen breakdowns. But there's all sorts of stuff. Like, for instance, yesterday, I was looking up, speaking of Martin Scorsese, I was looking up Martin Scorsese's lifetime box office stats. And I click on it on Box Office Mojo. I Google it because this is how I get to everything. I just Google Martin Scorsese Box Office Mojo, right? And I click on it and I get a little landing page that says, this is now on IMDb Pro. And I'm like, crap. But I have an IMDb Pro subscription already, part of my job. So I click on it and I go to the page and it doesn't have a breakdown by his films. It has a breakdown by like territories. I'm just like, what is, I don't understand. I just want to know the movies box office figures for the movies he has directed. That's all I want. I want a very simple, and I like poked around for about 90 seconds. I couldn't find it. I just stopped. I was like, I give up. I give up with this. I went to the numbers, which is the other like kind of Box Office Mojo competitor. And that site is not as useful as the old Box Office Mojo, but at least it had what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So I'm really pretty distraught about this. This is dead serious. I go to Box Office Mojo for fun, just to poke around and look at things. I will literally go there like 5 or 6 times a day just to be like, oh, I wonder what that was.
Not anymore.
How many theaters this was on.
Not anymore.
And it is
in your community, is this a thing people have noticed?
I mean, I would say my community is still film Twitter. It's still like critics and, oh yeah, everybody's like, this is terrible.
And
nobody,
so is Box
nobody
Office Mojo this. Hearing mm-hmm. about this?
No,
is
but
there
I don't
backlash?
Think anybody cares. Why would anybody at IMDb or Box Office Mojo care about this?
Well,
I don't know.
IMDb, they would not. But at Box Office Mojo, they might. Because again, they are not made for 50 million people. Yeah. They're made for a small subset of people like you.
Yeah. I don't know.
Can't you use your Twitter powers for good here?
No.
Like the time
Twitter can
you
only
got,
be used for evil.
No, like the time you got Arlington to fix a sinkhole.
The pothole. Roslyn.
Here's my challenge to you. Craft a tweet so deadly that you force them to revert to the old Box Office Mojo.
There you go. You should do that.
Right. Challenge accepted.
No, I challenge considered.
I'm just glad that I only go there once a week to find out that over the weekend, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, remained at the top of the box office with $19.4 million, had just edged out the Joker with $19.3 million. And in third place was the Addams Family with $12 million. It's funny because I thought Raul Julia had died. But I guess they sort of CGI'd him in like Princess Leia.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Okay, I was going to say box office thoughts, but I mean, we talked about Box Office Mojo, unless you have thoughts about Joker and its longevity.
Well, I mean, Joker's now the highest grossing R-rated film of all time worldwide, which is interesting.
It's amazing.
It's a bunch of incels.
And the rioting and the violence.
Oh, so much rioting and violence.
Because there was nothing really good or new at the box office, unlike this coming up weekend.
We haven't talked about Zombieland yet. Do we want to talk about that?
We decided to pick something from Netflix called Dolomite Is My Name.
And now we get to the movie portion of the show, which is going to be about 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know what? The show's almost over. Starring Eddie Murphy. Do you want to do a big boy mini review or something, Sonny? Something short?
Sure. Did you guys even actually watch it?
I did, and it was long.
It was, let's say, it was 2 hours.
Like I said, it was long. Ugh. Okay.
I sat in my car in the garage this morning.
Oh. And watched it?
And watched.
Okay. It was almost 2 hours.
Good. Well, it was a full two hours. I can't believe I bothered. Okay. I should have just skipped it and then just made it up and pretended to watch it.
Oh, you've never done that before.
I'm glad we all put a lot of effort into this today. Guys.
No, the point is that we did.
You know, we did. The point is I sat there. I'm like, you know what?
So you guys didn't like it. It's
go ahead.
So Dolomite Is My Name is Eddie Murphy's big return to prestige comedy, more or less. It's him. He is playing Rudy Ray Moore, who was a key figure in the blaxploitation cinema movement of the 1960s and 1970s. His Dolomite character was something of a parody, and the question is how much of it is intentional, how much of it is unintentional, blah, blah, blah. This movie is essentially a blaxploitation version of The Disaster Artist. Do you remember The Disaster Artist?
Yes, which was the movie with James Franco.
The movie starring James Franco about the making of The Room, which was a kind of a notorious vanity project that spiraled out of control and became a viral sensation. Well, Dolomite was a viral sensation before viral sensations were a thing. And it is a kind of underdog, you know, good guy made good, you know, achieves his dreams, blah, blah, blah story. I liked it a lot. I enjoyed all of the performances. I thought they were all, you know, it is a feel good movie. It's a feel good comedy about a bunch of people who are trying to make their dreams happen. And there are a couple of lines near the middle where they're talking about, you know, we don't see movies for people like us. We don't, you know, they don't make movies about people like us. We're doing this. We're building it. We're putting it together. We're doing it ourselves.
When they go to the Jack Lemmon Walter Matthau movie.
It's yeah. When they go see the front page,
yeah,
and they're like, "What is this nonsense on the screen?"
Yeah, that shot is fantastic because they are in the movie theater, and so you have the front page on the screen, which is a lesser Walter Matthau Jack Lemmon thing.
Yes.
And the jokes are terrible.
The jokes are terrible.
And the rest of the audience is like chuckling politely in the way that only because they're conditioned to laugh at this stuff. And the four or five African-American characters sit there and they look at each other and like, what is this?
What are these white people laughing at?
Yeah.
Did you notice, by the way, on the marquee, it's Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau,
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. Susan Sarandon's in one of the shots on the screen.
She is.
Would she have been on the marquee at that point? I feel like that was early.
Was she not? Or am I thinking it was the poster that I saw?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you saw it was on the marquee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I like this movie a lot. It is slight. It is a pretty standard biopic. It is a pretty standard, you know, underdog makes good, beats the world, shocks the world, shows everybody that, you know, but it's a million times better than Bohemian Rhapsody. I had a very good time. I'm very glad to see Eddie Murphy back and doing, you know.
Well,
kind
I
of,
feel that way about it.
Kind
it,
of, yeah.
Sure. I find
Eddie
him
Murphy.
Very
Eddie Murphy is fantastic in this. You know, it works for me. I'm a little surprised you guys are so down on it.
This is very unusual. Sometimes it's usually the
I'm not
way
down on it at all. I liked it a ton.
You oh, okay.
No, I was just.
I know.
We don't have a ton to say about it except that I liked it. Victorino.
I was going
to
say, you know.
It had action.
Nudity. Y'all. That's the bonus. That adds to the
score.
Great.
Go through your quadrants.
Okay, yes. Time. 2 hours. A little bit long. Okay. Plot. Very easy to understand. Wonderful. Great action. Funny action. And then there was the bonus of
the great Wesley Snipes like performances
Snipes.
Like
which
kind
is
of like
but
you
know what
so mincing director type you
because
know
it, like, it's so weird because you are conditioned to accept Wesley Snipes as Mr. Tough Guy action guy. Even the last time I had seen him was probably in The Fugitive Part 2, and he is more or less this sort of
so this is the genius so thing. they but it's not what you think, right? So they introduced the Wesley Snipes character, and he is a black actor in the, I guess we're in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And they see him in a strip club, and he's sitting talking with this woman, and they recognize him as an actor. And so they go over to talk to him. This is Eddie Murphy and his crew. We're trying to put together this piratical, you know, we're going to make our own movie because nobody else will make it. We're going to do it. And they go over to him, and he starts going on this, like, you don't just come talk to me. Like, I have an agent. I have a talent booker. Like, I'm a legitimate professional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am an actor.
You go to IMDb Pro and you look up my agent and then you call me.
He's like, I just worked with Roman Polanski, yeah. for God's yeah. sakes. Yeah. And they look at him and Rudy Ray says to him, I'll let you direct.
That yeah.
And all of a sudden he's like, okay. Yeah. Which is such a great gag because of on course, three different levels because that's what all actors want yeah. to do.
Right. And of course, because he's bragging that he had been directed by Roman Polanski and they're like, oh yeah, you were the elevator guy.
The elevator
Diego,
operator.
Yeah. The elevator guy.
And then once he yeah. starts directing, mm-hmm. he becomes frou-frou art guy.
Totally.
Again, his character yeah. shifts his character and he shifts. Starts like saying yeah. things with French accent. I thought the Wesley Snipes bit was
fascinating.
Just killed.
I'm glad that he's
it.
Not in trouble for anything because I thought he was, and he had fled the. I thought he had fled the country. But you know, and it's great because you could actually still see clips and possibly even the movie, even though it wouldn't be right to see the whole movie on the internet, obviously, because you know these, you know, royalties and trademark. I'm sure somebody will take it down, but it's out there, so you can catch it. But my only advice is to make sure you're using a secure network, JVL.
Recently, over 100 million people had their personal information stolen in a major data breach. Social security numbers, contact details, credit scores, and more, all taken from Capital One customers. There's a good chance you were affected. These kinds of attacks are getting more frequent and more severe. It's not just Capital One. Equifax, Facebook, eBay, Uber, PlayStation, and Yahoo have all leaked passwords, credit cards, and bank numbers belonging to billions of users. That's why I use ExpressVPN. You can't control how big corporations mishandle your data, but you can protect yourself. ExpressVPN is an app for your computer and phone that encrypts and secures your data. Hey, if a breach can happen at Capital One, it can happen to you. I never go online without ExpressVPN, and if you care about your privacy and safety, you shouldn't either. ExpressVPN connects with just one click. It's lightning fast and costs less than $7 a month. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN provider by TechRadar, CNET, The Verge, and countless others. Use our special link, expressvpn.com/WFB, right now to arm yourself with an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show and protect yourself. That's expressvpn.com/WFB for an extra 3 months free.
Thank you, JVL. To answer your question, B+. I gave Dolomite a B+. Yeah,
for
I know.
For you, that's a C.
It is. You know why?
How could
I thought it dragged in the middle. I liked. I thought it had a strong
everything
start.
Everything about this, the comedy thought, is your level.
I thought it had a strong start and it had a good ending. But I just felt like the middle was like, okay, we could wrap it. We could just make this tighter. We could make this shorter. So, you know,
you didn't care about them making the actual movie because that's
it
that's
went on
large.
Forever.
Well, what if but what if they had like, made you know, it shorter by trimming the nudity?
That's not the part you would trim. Speaking of trimming, I thought it had a kind of a Boogie Nights feel to it too.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, you 100%. Thought so?
I yeah. thought
it was
about
like
that. Totally.
Eddie Murphy's Boogie Nights or something. You know, I mean, yeah. and there's a weird personal connection for I'm sure Eddie Murphy doing this, and multiple reasons why he does it. I appreciate that he's able to embrace his doughy self as he's described.
Do you know what I appreciate?
And he's old.
I appreciate that Eddie Murphy can go and make a prestige-y kind of movie without turning into Tom Hanks.
Mm.
No knock
like
on Tom
the
Hanks.
The awareness of the self-importance, you mean?
There's no, just... I mean, this is, I think, a good movie and like a real movie,
mm-hmm.
which is telling, it's a biopic, but it's also funny. It sort of works on a bunch of different levels.
It's kind of strangely
but
sweet.
Nothing, yeah, it is sweet, but nothing about it is pretentious. Nothing about it is like, I'm going to show the world that I am a serious actor.
Yeah, no, it is totally Eddie Murphy playing to Eddie Murphy's strengths.
Yeah, I admire that a great deal, actually.
Do we think that this movie has award season potential? Is this going to garner some nods for the actors?
I hope it does, and I hope it does because I like Eddie Murphy. I mean, just as a...
But why is it on Netflix? Why wasn't this released?
I feel, right. I mean, it got a standard Netflix like 20 screen three weekend
so
release.
So it qualifies, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, it does. But why was this not a real movie?
I don't know. I feel like this is the sort of thing that you could who knows how much it costs to make.
It didn't look very expensive.
It didn't look very. I don't know, man. I don't know. This world that we live in now is so
it's
weird.
Very strange, isn't
it's
it?
It's so weird. It I don't understand any of it. I have so many thoughts about what Netflix is up to, and there's a big Hollywood Reporter roundtable with a bunch of executives that maybe we could talk about next week. But like one of the things they talk about is making the Irishman. And just, you know, the guy from the Hollywood Reporter is like, are you guys sad that, you know, Netflix is the only one who could make a $150 million Martin Scorsese gangster movie? And they're like, no, we're not sad. We're glad it exists, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, yeah, but I, at the same time, like, yes. Also, like, the fact that none of you people could make this movie... totally reasonably, because
they need to show profits and losses, right. And Netflix does not.
$150 million Martin Scorsese movie, you know, that movie has to gross $500 million worldwide. And he's never had, this is why I was looking up Scorsese, because he's never had a movie that has crossed $400 million worldwide. And this is not the sort of movie that's going to cross $400 million worldwide. It's, you know.
His biggest movie was The Departed?
No. Domestic it was The Departed, and worldwide it is Wolf of Wall Street, which did almost $400 million, 380 or something like that.
But the point is, fewer people will see it on Netflix than would have seen it in the theater. I mean,
I don't think that's true. I don't know that that's true. I really don't know that that's true.
If here's what I will say, when Netflix releases their occasional glimpse into the data, mm-hmm. which is very occasional, it is always things like an unprecedented number of people watched the first 7 minutes of X, yeah, right? Yeah. This is in making it the most successful Netflix thing ever. If more people, if the 15 million people watched a Netflix movie from front to back, Netflix would be all over the trades shouting it. Well, right? Because that's what right. it takes to make a movie that grosses $150 million domestically. Right. That has to mean that like 15 million human beings watched it from front to back.
Right, right.
And Netflix never says that. And the only reason I can think of, based upon the other stuff they do brag about, is that it does not happen on their platform.
The Netflix viewership number experience is a total black box, and I wish everyone in Hollywood would stop reporting on it, period. I wish people would just stop talking about mm-hmm. what their numbers are, because their numbers are all nonsense. It's usually something like what they've done now, what they've moved to now is like X million number of people watched at least 70% of this right. thing, which is, I don't know what that means. What does that even mean? That's a nonsense figure. Like why 70%? Why, you know, why don't we just know the full, you know, number?
I actually have a theory about that.
Which is?
So a bunch of stuff autoplays on Netflix mm-hmm. where people, you know, like it just, if you don't make a decision within 3 seconds, it just starts the movie. Mm-hmm. My guess is that they are averaging minutes by users.
Yeah.
And so they're taking, so if 10 people watch 15 seconds of it, but then one person watches all 120 minutes of it, they then average out all of that. And that's what gets them to the number of people mm-hmm. who watched 70%. They just look at how many people then does it take to get you to.
And by the way, that's number. One of my huge pet peeves is you can't get to you can't watch end credits anymore automatically, because, you know, midway through the credits in 5, 4, and then all of a sudden it's another thing. And sometimes it's not even an episode. It's a whole other movie.
No.
Because if you like this, you're going to like this. And
anyway,
you're on to something.
That is JVL. My theory about the thing. But it just, I mean, I think it's undeniably true that if you release a movie in theaters, more people see it. And it is paradoxical, because you would think, well, if it's essentially free, the marginal cost is zero mm-hmm. to watch a movie on Netflix if you already have a subscription and you don't have to leave your house. But on the other hand, it just seems to me to be true that more people will see a film if it is in the theaters than see it when it's on Netflix. All of this is an answer to your question about, do I think it has award season potential? And I think probably not. But had it been in theaters, I think it might have.
Yeah.
Right. By the way, I made a little ranking of Eddie Murphy movies.
Oh,
you hear,
a ranking!
You hear them.
Yes.
A top five. A top five. A top five.
Go
okay.
for it.
Number five is supposed to be 48 Hours, right? Everybody loves 48 Hours. I barely remember 48 Hours. Definitely not 48 Hours 2, another 48 Hours, just 48 Hours. Instead, I crossed it out and I wrote out a personal favorite, which is The Golden Child. You remember that?
You love the Golden
I love
Child.
That. It was, you know, well, it was like a Buddha, a little Buddha kid. And it took place in the 80s. And of course, I watched in the theater. And the woman in that movie, she was very attractive. Okay. And I believe, I'm ready for this.
It hit so many of the quadrants. Yes, how long was it? Was it more than 2 hours?
Oh, for sure. And in fact, I think the villain, I could be wrong about this, but I think the villain might have been the great Charles Dance, you know, Tywin Lannister from Game of Thrones. I could be wrong. Okay. Number four, Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Sorry. Pause.
Yes.
Charles Dance.
Yes. Thank you. Beverly Hills Cop 2, starring, besides Eddie Murphy, Brigitte Nielsen. She's a great villain. And directed by Tony Scott. That's a solid movie. And, of course, Bob Seger's Shakedown. Number three, Beverly Hills Cop. I was just discussing with JVL before you arrived, Sonny. The bizarre video, the Glenn Fry's Heat is On. Why is there a guy looking over the editing the film and splicing? And then they go into the movie. It's so ridiculous, but it's very 80s. Lots of sax. Number two, Coming to America. I love Coming. This is a very close one and two. I love Coming to America. I just watched it again with Kate and my son. You forget, by the way, how much profanity.
You
is
let
in that
Michael watch.
Isn't there isn't
Coming
there,
to America?
Isn't there a lot of nudity?
No, there's one bit of nudity, and I forwarded it, and that's where the woman comes out of the pool, and right. She says, "His Royal Majesty's penis is clean," or something like that. Pretty funny stuff. Okay, but it's a great movie, and John Amos is just, I love John Amos' McDowell's, is fantastic. Okay, oh, the best part of Coming to America, Eric LaSalle breaking the fourth wall. You know, it's raining, he's soaking wet, and the younger sister says, "Here, quick, take off these clothes. You know, these clothes, you're soaking wet." And he looks up at the camera, and it's fantastic. I liked him in that. Okay, and number one was Trading Places, which I still think is such a nice little, you know, insight into Philadelphia at that time, including Philadelphia high society and these clubs. I mean, that's not my world. I'm not a Philly guy, but I found it fascinating. And it has a lot of great lines, including when Eddie Murphy is in the hot tub and the bubbles and he's singing, and Don Ameche and Ralph Bellamy are outside and they say, what's he doing? What's going on there? And then and the butler says, "Oh, he's singing." And Ralph Bellamy, without missing a beat, says, "They're a very musical people, aren't they?" Funny stuff. I love it. Great movie. Okay. Do we have enough time? No, we don't have enough time. Star Wars, did you want to talk about what's happening?
We can talk about it next week. We'll push a bunch of stuff off for next
week.
Okay,
good.
We're already hitting the end here.
We are
We got 15 minutes of talk about Dolomite Inn somehow.
We did. We got more out of what we do, but I barely have enough time, and I also have to pick up my Popeyes. The next time I'm not picking up the food, I'm just going to go to DoorDash. That's right. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's promo code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Corrections, additions, shout-outs. I will say a great little shout-out for me and for Sonny, SUBBEACON listener, Ian Brody, who took us to lunch this past week. Came all the way from Canada, giving a big talk at SICE. He has a book out, on The Limits of the Power of the Prime Minister. I am botching that title, but please check it out on Amazon. Anyway, great to see him. Okay, that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Type in SUBBEACON at our podcasts. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba- Anything? Do we have anything?
I got a JVL. You must have something. Anything?
I'm barely awake.
Wow.
I'm so tired.
Okay. Fine.
Go ahead. No,
I was going to say so next episode, Terminator. Is that it? It's coming out.
I'm going hunting. I have a friend who just saw it last week and said that he legit thought that it functioned as the best sequel to Judgment Day.
I had a lot of strong doubts and suspicions, and I thought the fix was in, and they were trying to rig it. I think our friend Brian Fonten was saying about the teaser for all the fanboys so that they could drive up the ratings.
My friend is 100% a fanboy who went to a...
Okay. Yeah. But then I read the Variety review.
A screening. Well, you can't trust them anymore. Yeah. Sonny, but you've seen it already? Or
I've not. I actually am going to see it tonight.
People seem to like it.
Yeah. What? I mean, do we have anything else? Any other thoughts?
No.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about next week. Let's tease next week. Next week, we're going to talk about that Condé Nast story in New York Magazine. Everyone's going to be real excited
for a
deep dive into the world of fancy magazines. We're going to talk about...
We should have worked that, and we didn't because we were born at the wrong time.
We're going to talk about Star Wars, right? We're going to talk about Benioff and Weiss getting kicked out.
Game of Thrones duo out.
And then we'll talk about Terminator, and it'll be great. Great show.
If you
sat through this one... If you slogged your way through this one,
if you didn't turn off after the box office,
you'll really love that one.
The box office mojo, which we spent about 2 hours on, then you'll be fine.